Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds every month or so, and we welcome Rich Guthrie here to do just that. Rich is back, a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, a former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is the expert on birds on call here at WAMC. The number for you to call is 1-800, it's 1-800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. There are other ways you can contact us. Email is good, voxpop@wamc.org. If you go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, you can find out all the ways you can contact this program. Calling's the simplest, 1-800-348-2551. Hello, Rich. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Ray. Nice to be here.
You know, Jessica Blaustein Marshall and I did a couple of shifts pitching during the fun drive, and we had some fun. We talked a little bit about your appearances, which are always pretty popular, and we were giving away as one of the premiums that afternoon Stokes Field Guide, and it came with a CD of bird calls. Mm-hmm. And so we had great fun with the volunteers and the listeners and the people who pledged by playing some mystery bird calls and had people guess them. Only a couple correct guesses. No, no one really on your level of expertise. Now, I didn't think about it. I think we gave the books away, so I don't have a copy of the CD. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I could have quizzed you.
Okay. I'm up for it. Bring it on.
If we can find the CD next time, we'll do that. So you made a great comment before the show that this cold, raw, terrible, yucky weather is going to lead to a bounty of bird viewing.
Very likely.
When?
Soon.
Okay. Explain.
That will happen. Here's the story. You get a block of weather like we have right now.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of the prime bird migration period, these birds are wanting to go south, but they don't want to go through weather like this. So they wait, and they wait, and they wait, just to the north of us.
Yeah.
And as soon as this weather pattern breaks and opens up with the following cold front and high pressure system that comes out of the north,
yeah,
there they are.
Oh,
they're
really
going to ride that speed highway and get out of town while they can. And it's very effective. I mean, you get, usually after a pattern like this, you get a very favorable northwest wind and airflow, plus the accompanying cold weather that is an impetus to push the birds out. So we're waiting right now. We have a buildup of birds just to the north.
Oh, this is exciting.
Oh, yeah.
So what do we expect to see in abundance?
Well, the main thing coming that is ready to come down, holding off and then pattern up north, are the hawks.
Mm.
So we're going to see hawks and eagles, plus the geese, not only the Canada geese, but also snow geese, and their cute little cousin, the brant, B-R-A-N-T, which mm-hmm. is a tiny little goose that nests up in the high Arctic, up in the Atlantic, the Arctic slope.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be making their way down to the Atlantic shore, where they'll spend the winter on the salt water of the Atlantic. So you'll eye in the sky this coming weekend.
Okay, and the weather looks like it will break by
Saturday afternoon and then Sunday. And then look out. And that'll be a great time to go to one of your favorite hawk watch locations. In the Albany, New York area, that would be Thatcher State Park.
Oh, yes,
west
a beautiful
of Albany
view there, yeah.
The Overlook area there. Or in west of Albany, the premier hawk and eagle watching spot, especially for golden eagles, is Franklin Mountain, just outside of Oneonta.
Mm-hmm.
And east of us in the Massachusetts Springfield area, it's Mount Tom, out in Holyoke area.
Yeah.
And then south of us, Mount Peter in Orange County, New York. And various other places. There's a wonderful spot up on Lake Champlain that that carries a lot of birds. They slide down the shore of Lake Champlain. So favorable spots along there will be good areas to get out, look around, and see the hawks, the eagles, the geese, the waterfowl, and what have you.
Now, you mentioned eagles will be among those. I had it wrong all my life, but I thought eagles stuck around.
Oh, they do. But the ones up north of us do pass through.
Mm.
They sort of leapfrog through our area.
Huh.
So we get the ones that come down out of Quebec, northern Quebec, or northern Ontario, Hudson Bay, and come past us on their way down to Chesapeake or North Carolina or the Piedmont area.
So they do migrate.
Oh, they do. Oh. And some of them come here. This is it. Maybe this is
tropical capital district
Miami,
Great Northeast. Yeah.
As good as it gets, and it's not bad for them. They can certainly withstand the cold.
Well, Rich, we have a full rack of calls here, so let's get right to it. 1-800-348-2551. Eileen and Saugerties. Eileen, you're first.
Hi, Rich and Ray. Hi.
Hi.
There's a small, shallow pond near my house in Saugerties that's in a wide open field. It doesn't have any shelter around it or anything. So every year there'll be a couple of ducks there, or when the geese pass through, they'll stop and visit it for a while. But this past year, I've been watching most of this year, there's been a lone pintail duck there. And I did talk to you about that on in an email once, and you gave me some information. But I was wondering now, the pintail duck's been all by itself, except when the geese came through and gave it some company for a few days. And about a month ago, just a few blocks from there, there was about half a dozen pintail ducks, and I wish I had some way to tell my lonely guy, hey, there's some a few blocks away. Go be with them. Don't be alone all the time. But he or she has been alone all these months, and even as the pond went down in level, got very low for a while. Do the pintail ducks leave if they're by themselves? Do they still migrate?
Oh, sure. And this one, it's hard to say what's in the mind of a lone duck.
Yeah.
But
I guess he a bachelor or a widower. I don't know.
Either one, or just plain not interested. I wouldn't fret about it too much. If he's satisfied, he's happy there. If the pond will likely freeze up for the winter.
Yeah, yeah. Will he go before that, or
he better?
Yeah. Well, I wish I could tell him. Hopefully he'll know, right? They know better than we do.
Yes, and if it's a male pintail, it's very diagnostic, very distinguishable.
I can't tell. How do you tell?
Well, the male and female look very different from one another. The male is the one with the bold pattern, the brown head with the white stripe that goes up the long neck.
Yes, that's what this one has.
Okay, then he's a boy.
Oh, okay.
The females look like female mallard ducks.
Oh, my, that is different.
Mm. Yes, a big difference.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for reassuring me that I shouldn't, try to talk him out of anything.
That's right.
No. Thanks,
get him into therapy or something. Thanks, Eileen. We appreciate it. Now, it is said there are misanthropes or people who don't like people. Are there animals and ducks and birds that just don't like other birds?
Not likely.
No?
No. That wouldn't be fitting for them to in a natural environment. Now, they can identify and associate more with people. But more likely, this one here has found a spot that he's very content with, and he has no urgent need or urges to move on, and that works for him.
Okay, fair enough.
Nothing deep psychology in it. Just, there he is. He's happy. He's okay.
But isn't it fun to project human emotions onto animals?
Well, let's do it. Maybe he just likes the sound of the dance floor there.
No, I think that bird's psychotic. I mean, bottom line. All right, let's go to Timothy in Albany. Timothy, you're up. Timothy, are you there? Hello, Timothy.
Hello, hello.
All right. Hang on. No, Timothy's on line three. Is this Ralph?
This is Ralph.
Hi, Ralph. We'll call you Timothy to keep it clear, okay?
Pardon?
You're up. You're up. Go
ahead. Here we go.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I was really thrilled. I had a pair of Carolina wrens nesting this spring that came in. They had been around, but then I noticed, as the other birds started coming in, all the ones that are normally in my yard were no longer in my yard. They would come in, and I have towhees normally, and I have catbirds, and I have three pairs of orioles now nesting in my maple tree. They were there, but they didn't come down into the yard. And every once in a while, when one of my catbirds, they kind of like serenade me when I'm journaling out in the garden. Whenever one of them would come over by the fountains, this Carolina wren would come. One of the Carolina wrens would come sailing through there, and the catbird would take off. Are they really territorial?
Well, yes. Only in that context. Ordinarily, they're very accommodating and sociable in a way that they'll tolerate other birds in the territory. But when they're nesting, that's serious business. And they're not going to take any chances that, as unlikely as it may be, the catbird or the oriole is not a threat to their eggs or young. They're not going to take any chances. So they're just going to boot anybody out that they can. Most birds will do that. The catbird itself will probably chase the Carolina wren away from its nest during that season. But then later on, everybody's fine.
Yeah, later on, the Carolina wrens kind of disappeared, and then, I don't know, if I assume it was the same pair. They were back again by August.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's typical. Yeah. They will retreat back into the woods or more different surroundings and then come back again as they raise their and fledge their young and then return to their normal haunts.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, wow. That's great.
Thank you very much. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Before we go to break, Rich, how did the catbird get the name catbird?
Oh, it's a terrific name for the bird. It sounds like a cat. They have a cat-like call. Sounds like a cat meow.
All right, so we're going to break here in a moment. So why don't you make the catbird sound for us, Rich?
I'll make a cat-like sound that will come close to the catbird sound.
Fair enough.
Meow. Meow. Not really.
All right, Rich.
It's kind of like a meow sound.
All right, fair enough. I tell you what, Zach, I think we're best taking a break here and letting us regroup.
Support comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont. Billy Collins' Aimless Love, Wednesday at 7 p.m., Northshire.com. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, ValleyHomeImprovement.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Empire State Youth Orchestra, announcing concert blending visual art and music, representing the landscapes of America, this Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Egg. Pre-concert reception to view art at 5:30, esyo.org. And Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed@HavocAndWealthStrategies.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is here as we talk birds. And Rich, this weather pattern we're in is sort of a classic nor'easter. And you said that brings a special situation for birds.
Well, it does. It's early in the season. It's just a deep low that sweeps up along the coast. In the winter, it would bring us all that deep snow. And right now, it's bringing us a lot of rain and wind.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this type of storm has the potential to bring in some very unusual birds to our area.
So seabirds, et cetera?
Seabirds, for one, yes. Normally, we associate the influx of rare seabirds, tropical seabirds, with hurricanes. But this has the potential to do the same thing. So,
how tropical?
Very tropical.
Really?
Yeah. Tropic birds and frigate birds and different terns that are typically found in the Caribbean, south of Florida, that will be swept into the area.
And how could they survive in these climes?
Likely no, but many of them can and do. Following the storm, it's interesting to see the parade of these birds winging their way down the Hudson River or down the Connecticut River Valley, looking for, in fact, some of them fly way up high where they can see the coast from an elevation and start heading to the coast. They'll just go cross land till they get there. But other ones get caught in a place like Lake Ontario or Lake Champlain.
And that's it.
And unfortunately, they better get out of town because they just don't have the wherewithal to make it through.
Mm. All right, back to the phones we go. Rich Guthrie, our guest, 1-800-348-2551. John in Greenwich. John, you're on.
Hello. I have a question about Niger seed. I've been trying to attract songbirds, the smaller songbirds, to my yard, and was told that that was a great way to do it. I bought a bag and the feeder and all, and it has been completely disregarded by all birds, not just the songbirds. And even the squirrels and chipmunks and things that are typical nuisances just really don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm wondering, is that do I have bad seed, or is it just since it's a non-native food source, is that something that's keeping them away?
No, that's the beauty of Niger seed, is that most birds don't like it or aren't drawn to it. It's really the favorite, and once you get their attention, you'll have your share of goldfinches and siskins, and later on in the season, perhaps some redpolls. So keep it going. Once they find it, they'll love you for it.
Okay, terrific.
And the rest of the stuff is not interested in it. It's too small, too difficult, inaccessible, and not available to other birds and chipmunks and squirrels. That's a good thing.
How does the word get out?
Birds watch one another. During the course of the season, you might have cardinals or chickadees or nuthatches watching the goldfinches feeding on the Niger seed and want to give it a try. Doesn't work for them, and they move on. But the siskins and other goldfinches will say, aha, there's lunch.
So it'll take a couple stumbling upon it, and then you should be all set.
Right.
Okay, John.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Scotty in Otis, Mass. Scotty, you're up.
Hey.
Hey.
Nice to talk to you. First time calling.
Hey, great.
I have a bunch of these little brown birds in my yard every morning, and they've only been here for the last couple of days, and we have done some leaves, but there's still leaves falling with all the rain we've had, and they were jumping around on the leaves. I don't know if they were just drinking water out of the leaves, but they were just hopping. There must have been 20, 25 of them.
Well, at several possibilities come to mind. And the most likely one, and I'm going to take a guess here, that you have white-throated sparrows, brown and black and white streaked birds, mostly brown. They look brown from a distance.
Yeah.
And the diagnostic feature is their name, that is the white throat. Young ones will have a nondescript or a rather indistinct white throat, beige and gray, but the adults will have a bright white throat, and they all have a black and white or tan and black striped crown on the head.
Okay. Well, now the blue jays, I've noticed two blue jays in the yard, and I haven't seen the birds since.
Well, no correlation there. The blue jays and the white-throated sparrows will get along fine together. It's not as though one is going to displace the other. So, and they're enjoying what they're finding that was left around underneath the leaves that you raked and moved around.
Oh, okay. So, but I've never seen anything like it.
Well, the white-throated sparrow moves into the area this time of year and in huge numbers. They're really delightful little guys.
They are cool.
If you ever have the chance and you hear them sing, they have a wonderful little song that...
Oh, I love this part.
Okay.
Well, let's hear this.
Well, let's see if I can get the whistle going.
Right?
The whistle's not going to work today. That's a little low pitch. I can't get the high pitch in here this morning. I think a bit of coffee.
Have a little more coffee, yeah.
Yes.
We'll try it again later. Scotty, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Yep, bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551. Vane in Beacon. Vane, you're on.
Thank you. The other day I had two vultures come out of the sky. They're so beautiful, just floating with each other, one large, one small. They landed on a rooftop peak, and the larger one, and they started looked like they were mouthing each other. I don't know what they were doing, but they were fighting with their heads, and then they quit, looked around, and then the larger one took off. And I wondered what the heck was going on.
I'm wondering about that, too. And you certainly were both vultures. Vultures this time of year, all of them should be the same size. It'd be hard to distinguish a larger one and a smaller one.
So now, they were definitely different size, and when they came down, the white on the bottoms of their wings were the same. And when they were flying higher, either they were sort of crisscrossing, and they looked like vulture flying, the wing flutter kind of.
Okay, well, there are two kinds of vultures we have here, the turkey vulture and the black vulture. And down in Beacon, along the Hudson River in New York, both of them will occur. And they're usually pretty tolerant of each other, but it might have been, and the black vulture is smaller than the turkey vulture, but not much.
But do they look similar otherwise?
They look very much alike, except that the black vulture has white patches in the wing. That are visible when it flies. And a turkey vulture has long wings with a gray and pale, a black and pale gray pattern under the wing.
Ah.
Right. Well, so that's maybe what I made. Maybe it was.
Yeah, they may have been sparring a little bit. It's not anything sociable or affectionate or.
They're not kidding around.
Not kidding around.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
They're just. You know, birds tend to like to perch at arm's reach distance. So when you see birds on a wire or on a rooftop, they tend to be just a little outside the pecking distance.
Wow.
And that's the reason why. If they're too close, another bird will reach over and peck it, and they will move a little bit so that it's no longer too close. Not all birds are like that, but most of our birds will have that distance apart. So. Yeah. Which is kind of interesting to see. It's a uniform pattern along a wire or a rooftop.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Dane, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Francis in Adams, Massachusetts. Hi, Francis. You're up.
Hi. I've got a story that I've wanted to relate for a long time. I used to teach at Clarksburg Elementary School, and I would be the first one at the school, and I would open up the building. Mm-hmm. One winter morning, there was a skiff of snow covering the parking lot, and as I walked toward the building, there were, a set of mouse tracks, a single mouse, going across the parking lot. These tracks ended a short distance away from the building, and on the sides of the tracks where it ended were the imprints of wings.
Oh, wow.
Now, the story is not ended.
Okay.
About a yard away from that was a dead saw-wet owl.
Oh, no.
And from the point of that dead saw-wet owl, the tracks continued into the bushes. And this happened near some very, very large glass doors.
Yeah.
So it was a tragic story for the owl, but a happy story.
So what happened?
The owl... my idea is that the owl got the mouse, flew up, hit the door, killed itself on the door, fell back down. The mouse was released and went off.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Unfortunately, birds and glass do not get along well. They don't recognize glass for what it is. And we'll oftentimes see the reflection of the woods that are behind them and fly into the glass, thinking that's what's ahead of them.
Yeah.
And I presume, as you surmise, that's probably what happened. Very unfortunate.
Yeah.
I kept the owl in my freezer in the school for years, trying to find someone who would want it.
Uh-huh.
But I finally had to give it a decent burial in the woods nearby.
Oh, boy. Well, Thanks for bringing the whole show down, Francis.
No. It's a learning point and what happens. And we're working on, there's still some work going on out there to try to find glass that is not so lethal to birds. I mean, that's a critical area of concern for us. And so, it's good to know about it, sad to hear about it, but awareness is an important part of it.
But the mice listening are very pleased.
Well, that mouse probably didn't do too well either.
Yeah, you're probably
saw
right.
Wet owls, when they grab a mouse, they mean business.
Yeah.
It was the cutest little owl.
Yes, they are. They are.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
1-800-348-2551. Carla in Athens. Carla, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a small, some kind of hawk dove in between my arborvitaes and plucked out one of the sparrows. And I have a lot of birds in the yard. I live right on the Hudson River, and I was wondering if it was like a peregrine. Are they around here?
Peregrines are around here, but not likely the bird you saw. The peregrine is more of a high-flying, fast-moving hawk that will stick to wider or open country. Such as the Hudson River. Down in Athens, they probably will roost on the Rip Van Winkle Bridge down there in Catskill, or some building alongside the Hudson River, and where they'll be on the lookout for mainly pigeons and ducks and the gulls and the like.
Yeah.
But the bird in your yard was more likely one of the smaller hawks, a sharp shin hawk, which is frequently found around yards looking for songbirds that may be in between arborvitae.
Oh,
okay.
That's their main fare.
All right. Well, thank you. I mean, I watch them all the time. We have nesting eagles right across from us. It's great. It's
That is great. Yes.
Okay.
It's wonderful. It was a small hawk, and I only could think of like a peregrine. Oh, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you very much. And two death calls in a row. That's a new record here on the show. Jeffrey and Amherst. Jeffrey, you're on.
Hi. Yes. I'm wondering. Tell me. I would love to see a cuckoo bird.
Okay.
When and where they're active?
Summertime. Or go south.
Or go to WAMC.org and look at the webcam right now.
Oh, stop. Okay. But the cuckoo, we have two kinds of cuckoos, and that's a very good question. They, the black-billed and the yellow-billed cuckoo are two different kinds, and they each have their different pattern around here. And if you go south, there's yet another one. If you go to the southwest, there's yet another cuckoo. In fact, the real fun one, and that's the roadrunner, which is actually a type of cuckoo. But the I would say in the summertime, sometime between May and September, although a few may stick around into October, I imagine they're all gone by now.
And where do you have to go?
Florida.
Okay.
Venezuela, something like that.
Okay.
Where the cuckoos go. They're not go ahead, I'm sorry.
What habitat would I find them active in?
Mixed woods, edge of deciduous woods. They feed on caterpillars, especially the fuzzy kinds of caterpillars, like the woolly bear or the gypsy moth or some of the other caterpillars. And the best thing to do is listen for them. The Germans call them, or the Southerners call them, the rain crow. The Germans call them the Regenpfeifers. It has a call that goes, not like the cuckoo, cuckoo of Europe.
Right.
Our own ones have that sort of single note, or
they got the coop, but not the coup. I got it.
Right, they can tell the time, but only by the minute, not the hour.
Thank you, Jeffrey. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Dodge, I believe it is, in Amherst. Dodge, you're on.
Great, thanks, guys. I have a question regarding wingspan.
Okay.
I know that, or I believe that the albatross has the largest wingspan in the California condor and pelicans, but up in our neck of the woods in the Northeast, what bird has the largest wingspan, and what would it be?
Okay, that likely the turkey vulture, and that will have a 6-foot wingspan.
6-foot wingspan, and that's larger than the regular black vulture?
Yes, it is. The black vulture is considerably smaller. They don't have the long, narrow wings of the turkey vulture. And another one with large wings would be something like the great blue heron. But I believe the turkey vulture gets the honors for the largest wingspan.
Around here or around the world?
No, around here.
Okay.
And they put that to good use. The turkey vulture, now's a good time to watch for turkey vultures in the sky. They have that beautiful soaring pattern where they can fly through the air without flapping their wings. They use those extended, lengthy wings for good purpose, for good use.
Is it true that the albatross has the largest wingspan and they can travel for thousands of miles without stopping?
Yes, they do. And what they do is they skim the air pattern over the waves of the ocean. And the turkey vulture does a similar thing, but with the air patterns over hilltops and open fields. Little bubbles of warm air that are rising that cause the turkey vulture, that cause the air to lift up.
Huh.
Giving them their buoyancy.
There you go.
And they can go for extended distances, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Every now and then you'll see one that have to flap. And when they do flap, they have an interesting flapping motion, too. They look like a giant bat. They look like a giant fruit bat.
Huh.
That when they flap. But they have a distinctive way that they do flap, but they seldom do that. They do that mostly in the morning when they're taking off and they have to get some lift, some altitude.
Yeah.
And sometimes when the wind fails or they want to maybe shift to a different bubble, they'll go into an occasional flap. So
there you go.
It's not like the albatross that could go for, like you say, for miles and miles and miles.
All right, Dodge, thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
So the turkey vulture, is that, stereotypically it circles waiting for somebody to die. Do they just eat carrion?
Yes, they do.
They do not eat any live critters?
No, they don't. They don't have the capacity to catch something alive. That's not to say, and I don't think any bird will ever turn down an easy meal. No, they're strictly scavengers that
just
will
lazy look, or what's the problem?
Adaptation. That's their MO.
Interesting.
That's how they earn their living.
All right. Let's see here. Right before we go to a break, here's an email from Jamie. Suggest to the guy with the new bird feeder that he put some black sunflower and cracked corn on a plate beneath the bird feeder. Once the Blue Jays find the dish, they will announce it to all concerned. The heralds of the bird world. Also on the sub, do we even talk about Blue Jays today?
No. Briefly, but that's a very good point.
Also on the subject of Blue Jays, I used to have dozens of them at the feeders, and now for the last year, there are only a few pairs around. Any idea what's up, Rich?
Not a thing. Not with the Blue Jays, anyway. There's still plenty of them out there. And in fact, it's interesting to see some of them are migrating through from the north. So there's no shortage of Blue Jays, to my knowledge. I've watched them here and there.
Okay. Oftentimes on this show, people will say, gosh, the birds are not appearing anymore, and they come back, right? It's just a cyclical thing?
Just for the moment, or perhaps there is a dip in their local population. Some of them we have done very, very, very deep concerns regarding, things right, like the wood thrush and the like.
Let's hold that thought. We'll take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's birds. It's Rich Guthrie. It's Vox Pop. We'll be back.
Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations, serving Western Massachusetts. KentHicksConstruction.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. And H. Houston Sun True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, New York, providing energy-saving ideas for home winterizing since 1932. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. I'm hearing strange drilling noise. I thought
sounds
that was
like the dentist office.
Thought that was you, Rich, but apparently it's a drill.
Yeah.
Okay, so that threw me off the game. Yes. Zach says it's okay. So why don't we just go back to the phones? If you hear a strange noise, Joseph in Rotterdam, it's just they're drilling something. It's fine. You're on.
Hi, I'd like to know, a friend of mine who has a hummingbird feeder said she noticed less hummingbird this season. Is there a reason for that?
No, not really. There shouldn't be. Hummingbirds are, they live a perilous life. You know, they're mostly gone from our area by now. And I do want to say that it's not too late. You can still keep your hummingbird feeders going in case there are some vagrants that come through. And this is the time of year when the real rare hummingbirds might show up. And a few late ruby-throated hummingbirds might be around. There was on the eBird, which is Cornell University's site for reporting and also for receiving reports of birds in the area. And I see that in Scotia, New York, there was a hummingbird reported on eBird just about a week ago. And out there in Cape Cod, of all places, there was a rufous hummingbird, which is a western species of hummingbird that marches through this area in small numbers this time of year. So it's a good idea maybe to keep the hummingbird feeders going. Now, with regard to our ruby-throated hummingbird population, again, they should be all gone by now. They're on their way to Mexico and Yucatan and Central America. However, it is a perilous journey, and some of them make it. Some of them, unfortunately, do not. Okay. But
can I ask a second question, please?
Sure, go right ahead.
Is it possible for birds of different species to crossbreed?
Yes. Not usual, but not unheard of.
The reason reason why is because I could have swore last year I saw a cross between a blue jay and a cardinal. It had red and blue feathers in the Albany area.
Really?
Hmm.
That would be very unusual.
Is
because
it physically possible?
Physically, probably not.
Okay.
Not at all. Usually, it's close relatives, usually among very sibling species. Let's say that you'll find hybridizing, but not really amongst birds as distant as blue jays and cardinals.
Could you find a mutant cardinal with blue?
Very possibly. Very possibly. I'm wondering what it really was. A picture might, gee whiz, that I can't imagine. There's probably something that will display red and blue like that, like perhaps a bluebird. But I don't want to see. They look so much different than cardinals or blue jays that the red and blue pattern might show.
Wow, great call. Thanks, Joseph. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Walter in Rome, New York. Hey, how's the weather in Rome, Walter?
Raining like it's been for the last week.
Well, improve sometime.
Yes,
yeah, you're on.
I'm a contractor and I'm building a pole barn. Guess how it's working out for me? Not well. Anyway, I had a question. I've lived in the same house that I built for 27 years, and every year, just like the returning of the swallows to the chimney swifts or whatever, I have my swallows return. 15 to 25 barn swallows. Sometimes they nest in my garage, which I allow. This year, not a one.
Really?
I live in a very rural area with agriculture all around me. I was wondering, has there been any talk of effect of pesticides similar to, the bat thing with the
white nose,
different,
yeah.
But or let's say honeybees.
Yes, and to answer your question, I noticed that too. That to me there
I'm glad somebody else did notice.
Yeah, there seems to have been a decline in the number of barn swallows around. Not so much with tree swallows; they're close relatives.
No, they were back.
Yes,
right. Bluebird boxes, which they use.
And I agree with you. In my observations, I think there has been a decline in the number of barn swallows. And this is where citizen science, such as getting back to the ebird.org, ebird.org, on the internet, will bring you to a site where this sort of thing can be reported and tracked over time. It's one of the valuable resources available through Cornell University.
Yeah.
And one that everybody in their backyard or out in the field or visiting new areas can refer to, either to report sightings or to get them. And that's where we can keep track of things such as barn swallow and wood thrush populations, either and get a flag if there's any sort of problem going on.
Okay.
Well, there's such a benefit to insect.
No question.
Presentation. One other thing I wanted to tell you.
Sure.
2 years ago, I had a campfire up at my camp, and my friend and I are sitting there. A junco comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it was a junco. Anyway, I got my bird book out immediately, and we went through it. It had a white tail. Are there aberrations like that?
Yes, there are. And unusual, but not unheard of. And with a bird population such as the junco and the robin and some of the blackbirds, you'll get these spots that will show up with these patches of white or in undefined pattern on the body.
Okay.
So.
Well, we called it the Walt Joel bird. That was my friend. It's now officially the Walt Joel bird. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks.
Okay.
A lot,
okay then.
Walter,
thank you for that.
We appreciate the call very much. Over to Jennifer in Pownell, Vermont. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question concerns five bluebirds who made a visit last week, 2 days in a row, and spent over a half hour swooping around the box that is mounted close to our house, going in, swooping. It appeared to be three males and two females. Is it possible they're the five that fledged from the box this spring?
Very possible. And what's probably happening is they're looking for a place where they can safely stay over for the winter. And bluebirds will use a nest box as a communal roost, night roost. And so
They remember having left there earlier in the spring, so come back and feel secure there or something?
That's very possible. It's hard to say, though. It could be just another troop of bluebirds that was moving through and were checking it out on their own. So I suspect you're correct in that, that it was the local family that moved around and after they fledged and still keeping close to one another and haven't forgotten the hospitality that you offered.
Well, the first three that were attempted in that box were killed by something.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, that happens. And if you go to the Bluebird Society, you'll find that there are nest guards that you can use that will keep predators like that out, that may help keep predators like that out. That
something had pecked them and killed them or something like that.
Yeah, it could be house sparrows or even even wrens that will do that. The house sparrow is notorious for doing that.
Thank you very much for answering my question. I love the show.
Jennifer, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it very much. Another satisfied customer, Rich. How about that?
Well, of course.
It's like Basil Fawlty said, a satisfied customer. We should have her stuffed. But
what?
Remember Fawlty Towers? No, you don't remember that program.
No, afraid not.
You were watching birds. I was watching public TV.
Yes.
1-800-348-2551. Tammy in Cooperstown. Tammy, you're on.
Yes, hi, Rich. A couple of weeks ago, I was driving, and on the side of the road, I thought what I saw was maybe a bald eagle. But as I drove by, I noticed it had a white, like, collar and a long, naked-looking neck. And so I thought I might have seen a condor.
Well, the bird you're referring to would be either the California or the Andean condor, I presume. And neither one of them would be expected in this area by far. And I haven't heard of any having, there may be one or two in an Andean condor in an aviary someplace or a zoo where they actually were using Andean condors as test birds to see if they could raise the California condor in captivity. It was, but that was a while ago, and I haven't heard of any of those getting out. Although it's very possible, remotely possible. So I have to wonder really what it might have been that you did see. But
does it sound like what Tammy is describing is an Andean or California condor?
It does. It would, yes. However, the likelihood is so remote that I have to seriously question that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too, because, like I said, it was big, so I thought it was a bald eagle, because
yes.
They're around here.
Yep.
And as I drove by, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And then a coworker of mine, who lives about 10 miles away from there, said that she thought she saw a condor also.
Well,
get your camera.
Yeah.
I know.
What I can't do is dispute what you saw, but I can question what you saw and wonder what you saw, but I can't dispute what
you
saw.
That's right, because Rich has seen the rarest of the rare.
I did indeed.
And people dispute you.
Absolutely.
And you know how it feels.
Oh, yes. And and also, you know, I'm a reviewer for the eBird reports that do come into, and I'm frequently faced with some reports that are that need some review.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's just not possible to get to the solid answer that may be behind it. But in keeping with science, you know, we try to be as accurate as we can be and stick to the facts.
Tammy, I should explain that Rich saw a very rare, or claims he saw, a very rare woodpecker down
did
south.
Did see.
And this is one that they say is extinct.
Wow.
Yes. Up till then, it was believed to have been extinct. But
what's the name of the bird?
The ivory-billed woodpecker.
Ah.
And I was down in Arkansas when, and I, you know, I don't doubt at all in my mind. So
Tammy doesn't doubt the condor.
Well,
do you doubt it, Tammy?
No, I don't. I'm pretty sure of what I saw.
Very cool.
Well, stick to your guns.
And bring
your camera with you everywhere and get a picture.
I will. One other quick question. What about a Canadian falcon around here?
No such thing.
No such thing.
Right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, no, it's just a coworker because I was talking to him about the condor, and they said that they had seen a Canadian falcon, and they had called the Audubon, and they said no. So I guess that's why.
Yeah, right.
All right, fair enough.
I wonder what they saw, but there's no such thing as a Canadian falcon. And, you know, you could think of all the permutations.
There's a Maltese falcon, obviously.
Yes.
All right. Tammy, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Bye. All right. That was a good one. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Okay, let's see. All right, let's go to the line 5. Lynn in Shelburne. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, I feel like I've missed you guys.
Well, you're on.
You haven't been on forever. Anyway, I love you both. I've got a bird call problem.
Okay, oh, good.
Yes, I know. But I've heard this bird before, and it's the middle of the night, mm-hmm. and I do sleep in a place where I can hear birds in the middle of the night very clearly. And it's an owl, I believe. But before the owl does its, like, ooh, 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 ooh thing, it's just, like, shriek before it. Like, some kind of shriek before he does that.
Mm-hmm.
You going to make the shriek, Lynn?
This is what happens when you put it up to Ray. He'll put you on it.
I'll let Rich do this.
Okay. Well, what is it, Rich? Screeching horned owl?
Actually, probably a young great horned owl. And they have this this very attention-getting screech.
Yes.
That will does its job. It gets the attention of the adult birds who may have answered in response. So they may have been close to each other. The baby owl
says, "I'm hungry."
Does a screech? It says, "I'm hungry. I'm over here." And mama or papa says, "Hoo hoo hoo."
There you go, Lynn. You see,
that's amazing.
Rich knows all.
I do have the little barred owls around here, and they get to hoo, and then do hoo hoo, you know.
It could be the barred owl as well. They have their pattern of doing it, and either one of them is capable of the screech and the hoot.
Oh, sorry, Lynn. I hit the button too fast. You know what? I apologize.
Yeah.
I apologize.
So it could very well be either the great horn or the barred owl.
Okay.
And they are close and usually associate in the same sort of neighborhood.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And again, apologies for cutting you off there. Jessica in Blooming Grove. Jessica, you're on.
Hi. I have a question regarding black vultures.
Okay.
Last year, starting in... about this time of year, we started having a couple of them come into the neighborhood. We've always had turkey vultures, but over the course of the winter, we ended up getting between 60 and 70 turkey black vultures in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They roosted in my neighbor's trees, and they were quite the nuisance. They would torture the dogs in the neighborhood, go right up to the fence or right up to the end of the property line and hiss at them and things like that. They're starting to come back again this year. Is there anything to do to deter them from coming?
Okay. No. No?
No.
No, what happened was the black vulture is a new kid on the block. They were typically a very southern bird, and as they followed the turkey vulture in that sort of expansion northward, as so many other bird species have done.
Mm.
And they came up in a vengeance, and the numbers are increasing, and they are quite... aggressive and unafraid. So
there's nothing you can do.
No, but there's no. They don't pose a real threat. I mean, they look like a threat, but they're not really. They're not going to. As far as I know, there's no harm to your dog or to you or anything other than.
Well, but I didn't think they would hurt the dog. But we do have a lot of stray cats in the neighborhood, which I'm not too happy about. But they do circle them.
Yeah, they won't bother the cats
crowded,
either.
Yes.
So that once again, they will only eat dead things.
Right.
Okay, Jessica, thanks a lot. All right, Rich, here's one from email. For two summers, I've seen a pair of terns making their home on Kinderhook Lake. They look a lot like terns I see when I visit Sarasota, Florida. Is it common for this type of bird to live so far north on an inland freshwater lake? Do they overwinter or migrate? That's from Melissa.
Or they migrate. Whether they are nesting on an inland, yes, they do occur on inland freshwater lakes.
Okay.
Usually larger lakes like Lake Champlain, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, or Oneida Lake in New York State. But a small lake like Kinderhook Lake, probably not. I suspect they were just passing through, and they will settle in for a little while, then move on. They don't winter here. They need to move south.
Rich, what is your address for the blog?
My name, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Oh,
that's my
email
address.
Right, okay.
And at timesunion.com. And look at the blogs there
for birding. Rich Guthrie, always fun to have you here, my friend. I appreciate it. We'll see you next time. And thanks to everybody who called in. Boy, fun show today. Support comes from Skidmore College Master's Program, part-time graduate study customized according to individual student objectives, available at a distance, MALS@skidmore.edu. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com, and on Facebook. Zach Malloy has been at the controls. Nicely done, Zach. Your phones were answered by Mary Vetter. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Thanks for being here, everybody. Stay tuned now for a news update.